You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday, the 31st of January, 2023, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, yesterday we were talking about how some of the police, particularly London police, are functionally illiterate, and obviously that is causing a drop in standards. And today we have a poll that has been asking members of the public what they think about modern policing. More than 4 in 10 of us believe the police are more interested in wokeness than in catching criminals, the survey suggests. Now, why might this be? Why might it be that people are losing faith in the police? Could it be because we are now seeing the police in police cars decorated in the rainbow flag, trying to show their support for LGBTQI activism, showing support for political activism when the police are supposed to be unbiased? Could it be because we've seen police at gay pride parades dressed up with party whistles and rainbow makeup on, dancing about from one side of the street to another at gay pride parades? Could it be because we've seen the police claiming that it's an offence to give offence, and they actually had to take down that campaign because it is not an offence to be offensive, much as they might like to make it into an offence? We've seen the police with rainbow shoelaces. I mean, it is mainly the LGBTQI activism that seems to be upsetting people. But then, of course, we also have the police going around to people's houses, wanting to speak to them about they needing to check their thinking because people have expressed so-called transphobic thoughts online by saying that men are men and women are women, for saying things such as there are only two genders. We've had the police arresting people for being critical of multiculturalism, government policy on immigration, critical of diversity, all these government agendas that they're trying to push, all these politically correct agendas, and the public see and read about the police doing these things, and from that they gather that the police are therefore more interested in enforcing political correctness than they are in actually catching criminals. That's the reason why more than 4 in 10 of us are now thinking this. The public are under the impression that, barring murders and traffic offences, officers do not treat crimes seriously enough, the poll found. And of course, some of those things are now considered crimes, aren't they? It's now considered a crime to be transphobic. That's why the police are going around to people's houses, because of things that they have said online. They are considering just things that people say to be crimes in themselves, but the general public don't really realise that. And so they say, well, they're not treating crimes seriously enough. And they mean real crimes, violent crimes, theft, mugging, murder, rape, that sort of thing. People see those sorts of things as actually being crimes. But just being critical of government policy, people don't really see that as actually being a crime. And I think a lot of people would be really shocked to realise the limitations that we actually have on freedom of speech within Britain. And when people say that the police are more interested in wokeness than catching criminals, that's what they're referring to. They're referring to all this support for LGBT that they see, and then reading about how the police are arresting people for things that they said on Twitter or things that they said on Facebook. voters blame woke policing and the cost of living squeeze for driving up crime, according to the study from consultancy Public First and think tank More in Common. They're the people that actually carried out this survey. Now, obviously, that was the choice that people were given. Do you think that woke policing and the cost of living is the reason for this increase that we see in crime? But there are other reasons for this, aren't there? The highest amount of crime that we see comes from the multicultural areas. It comes from the cities. We know from doing surveys and studies into multiculturalism and diversity, we know that the sense of community trust goes out of a community once it becomes multicultural. And people don't even trust their own neighbours when they are of the same ethnicity that they are. And obviously, you have a multicultural area, there's going to be more potential there for criminals to find victims, because it is going to be much easier for them to find a victim from a different ethnicity to their own. If they were within a ethnically homogenous area and they were to try and carry out a crime, chances are they would get caught because the person would know who they are because they're part of the same ethnicity. And also it would be more difficult for them to do so because they would be carrying out the crime against somebody from their own extended family. So if you have a multicultural area, there are going to be more potential victims. Plus, you also have the fact that some ethnic groups seem to commit more crimes than other ethnic groups. And that goes on looking at the surveys. Specifically, the Black, African and Caribbean ethnic groups seem to have the highest rate of criminality. And the Chinese ethnic groups seem to have the lowest rate of criminality. So when you have multicultural areas, and of course you have a lot of black people within that area, then the likelihood is that you're going to see more knife crime, because black youths are disproportionately involved in knife crime. As we heard yesterday, about five times as much knife crime occurs within the black community as their percentage of the population. So that causes there to be an increase in crime. And of course, the people that are doing this poll, they're not going to ask the general public this. They're not going to give that as a question and an answer that they can give in this poll. And of course, it's not fair of us to blame black people for this. It's just the way that they are. We know that it's not just something that they're doing in Britain. They're not just, you know, more of them are carrying out crimes because they happen to be in Britain. They just happen to have a higher amount of criminality among their groups. So you can't blame them for that. The people that are to blame for this are the people that brought diversity to us. It's our own representatives in government that changed the rules for immigration. They're the ones that have encouraged the multiculturalism and the diversifying of our cities. They're the ones that are to blame for the increase in crime, not the people who have a higher rate of criminality amongst their own people, because that's just a statistic, isn't it? That's just something that we have always known. Our politicians have always known this, and yet they still allowed it all to happen. They still allowed the borders to be opened. They still encouraged diversity in our capital cities, knowing that the likely result of that was going to be more crime within our cities. The focus groups surveyed agreed that boredom drove young people to crime and blamed the closure of youth centres and community spaces for increased offending in deprived areas. And again, I think there is an ethnic component to this. Some of the most deprived areas in the country are rural areas that are 100% white. There are no youth centres. There are no youth clubs. In these rural areas, there are very, very few jobs. What jobs there are have a very low wage. You've got rural living. There's not many jobs to go around. It's difficult to find a house. You can't afford a house because it's a rural area. The people that live there can't afford to buy their own houses. Yet you still have a very low crime rate in those areas because they're still ethnically homogenous. And they're with the people that live there have a pride in the area that they live in, because a lot of the time their family lived there for many, many years, many, many generations. So they have a pride in the area and they don't turn to crime. So it's not that there is poverty. It's not that there is low wages that encourages this. And you could say, well, could it just be the difference between city living and rural living? But of course, then you can always go to a city that is not multicultural in Eastern Europe and compare the crime rate there. You could go to somewhere like Vilnius in Lithuania or Riga in Latvia, and both of those places are still 99% white. And you can go there and you'll find that there's no litter on the streets. There's no crime to speak of. You feel just as safe there as you would do in a rural village within Britain, and yet you're in the capital city of a European country. And again, the difference is that those European cities are still majority white, 99.9% white, I think, in Vilnius and Riga. So they still have that ethnic homogeneity. They still have that sense of community. If they see litter, they'll pick it up. They won't drop litter. And you have these low crime rates. Yet, as soon as you take a look at a multicultural city, say Paris, for instance, or London, and you'll see that the white people, the indigenous British or the indigenous French, they're almost in, well, they are in the minority there in that city. And you've got all these different racial groups that are living there. And you have this increase in crime, and you get poor areas that are also multicultural. And again, you will see a lot of crime there. And that is a part of this. You could say, well, yes, well, poverty could be a part of it and the lack of youth centres. But the reason why there isn't a sense of community, because if you have a sense of community, then people aren't really going to commit crimes because they know that they're going to be harming their community. But if you have multiculturalism, you don't have that sense of community there. So that encourages this. So yes, there probably is a bit of there isn't much for the youth to do. But more important than that, they don't have a sense of community there because of multiculturalism, because they don't have ethnic homogeneity. And as I pointed out, you also have this higher criminality that there is amongst certain ethnic groups, and that plays into this as well. But of course, this survey isn't going to talk about that. This survey is being put out there just to pretend that that's all it's down to is the lack of youth centres. They just need more table football and ping pong, and then they'll stop stabbing one another. The survey also found that 68% believe the police have given up on trying to solve crimes such as shoplifting and burglaries altogether. And we're really following America in this. I think it's in California. If the items that were shoplifted are worth under $1,000, the police won't come out. They won't do anything about it. And we've seen these videos of people going into shops in California and just loading up bin bags and walking out the door, and the security don't do anything about it. And that's the reason why. And I think we're starting to see similar things happening here in Britain. The police aren't going to be bothered about shoplifting. The security are concerned that if they try to stop a shoplifter, they might be prosecuted for physical violence against the shoplifter. So they're not likely to do it, and then the police aren't likely to do anything about it either. Similar thing is happening with burglary. A lot of the time people just think, well, it's not even worth reporting it, is it? Because they're not going to catch the person that's responsible. 81% of the public think the police need to be held more accountable for bad behaviour. And I guess that plays into what we see happening in America and the Black Lives Matter movement, talking about bad police behaviour that ends up with dead black people. You also end up sometimes with dead white people. A lot of the time that is down to the people resisting arrest, though. That's not to say that there isn't bad behaviour. It's just to say that because of the way that it is covered in the media, there is this public perception that there is far more bad behaviour than there actually is, I think. The National Police Chiefs Council previously announced that officers in England and Wales would now be attending every burglary. Well, just because they attend every burglary doesn't mean that they're actually going to find the people that did it and they're going to charge them. I think it's only something like 3% of burglaries they ever actually find somebody to charge. That's a similar figure for sexual assaults. Home Office figures show just 3.2% of 200,000 sexual assaults resulted in a charge. And of course, nationalists have been highlighting the non-white rape gangs that we had over the years, predominantly Pakistani rape gangs, and how they were hardly prosecuted. But when you look at this figure here, just 3% out of 200,000 sexual assaults, that really shows you that perhaps race wasn't really even a part of this. And really, it's just that all of these sexual assaults are going uncharged. I mean, 97% of these sexual assaults, people are getting away with it. So you could look at the rape gangs and you could say, well, have about 3% of the rape gangs been investigated? And is about 3% of the offenders, have they been charged? And I guess it would probably be even less than that. But what I'm saying here is it isn't just these non-white rape gangs that are getting away with sexual assaults. From looking at this figure here, it looks like just all sexual assaults are not being properly investigated. Is it because we don't have enough police? Or is it because, as is suspected here, it's because the time of the police is being directed towards other things? The latest Crown Prosecution Service figures show that the volume of suspects charged with rape has risen in five consecutive quarters. So that's good that is going up. But are they actually having a success there? Are they finding them guilty? I mean, this is quite strange, this figure, because you will often hear the feminists say, well, only like 1% of rapes actually end up in a conviction. And they sort of imply by that that it's absolutely terrible and 99% of rapists get away free. But what it's actually saying is that 99% of cases, the person that's been accused of rape hasn't actually carried out the rape. So that's at two opposing ends of the scale. So what you probably have is a lot of innocent people that are actually being accused of rape that didn't actually commit the crime of rape. But at the same time, you also have people that did carry out rape that get away with it. So you can't really look at these rape figures, I think, and say that there's all these rapists are getting away with it. And what they're saying here is that more people have been charged, but they're not actually saying that more people have actually been convicted of rape. The study found support for more on-the-spot fines for people found guilty of antisocial behaviour, such as vandalism or drug taking. But that sort of assumes that the people that have been found guilty of it are going to actually have any money. The problem is, if you're involved in drug taking, all your money is going to go on drugs. And if the police stop you carrying out some antisocial behaviour, you're not likely to have any money that you're going to be able to pay an on-the-spot fine with. Similar for the sort of people that are going to carry out vandalism. They're not going to be the sort of people that have spare cash lying around. Probably a lot of these youths that get involved in this, they may not even have a bank card to go to a wall and take out any money. The sort of people that they want to be given on-the-spot fines to here aren't the sort of people that are going to be able to pay these fines. Respondents also indicated support for community schemes for the perpetrators of antisocial behaviour with bespoke punishments that made them responsible for the damage caused by their actions. And I guess that's a good thing. I think what they're talking about there is people that have carried out graffiti or vandalism, making them clean up what it is that they have graffitied. The most popular of these were instant fines and making people pick up litter or clean graffiti. Focus groups in red wall seats largely said the levelling up agenda was pointless without a robust plan to tackle crime. And Labour will just say that the police, the government rather, are not putting enough funding into the police. We don't have enough police. The Conservatives will say, yes, well, we're going to employ more police this year. And we're going to try and direct them towards, as it says here, going to each one of these houses and making sure that the burglary is investigated. But you haven't got anybody there that is saying, well, how about we stop having the police investigate frivolous things such as non-crime hate incidents, which is when somebody thinks something somebody may have said or did may have been motivated by a dislike of a certain minority, and they haven't actually carried out a crime, but they've displayed the fact that they might not like a minority. They've displayed the fact that they don't sufficiently have enough affection for a minority. And the police take down their particulars and the details of everything and record it and save it all. And it's not even a crime. You don't have enough people calling that out. I guess you could say that Suella Braverman has spoken about this. And there was a famous court case, and which the Bad Law Project, the guy that runs the Bad Law Project, he was involved in this. Harry something, I think his name was. And he appealed the fact that the police had come round to his house to check his thinking for something that he said, that they said was transphobic. And he said, well, this is impinging on my freedom of speech. And he took this to court, and there was an investigation, and they said, yes, this needs looking into, these non-crime hate incidents, but they're still being recorded. And then from that, you have this this changing from the word hate crime, which used to actually mean violence that was carried out, to do with hatred of a certain minority, and they've subtly changed that to now mean language that minorities don't like. And so the crime aspect of it, which people always thought actually meant violence before, is now just language. And they will say, oh, well, it's a hate crime if you use a racial slur. Oh, it's a hate crime if you say something that a minority might not like. So you have this non-crime hate incident, which is just acting in a way that may not show sufficient affection for minority. And then you have this idea of a hate crime, which is saying something which might hurt the feelings of a minority. And the general public think that it's, you know, when you talk about a crime, it actually means something violent or theft or an attack. And what it now means is just simply language. And you don't have anybody that's speaking up saying, well, how about we look into this freedom of speech issue and give the people more freedom of speech. And then instead of having the police going around because of things that have been said online, on Twitter or Facebook, how about we direct the police to going after actual violent criminals instead of going after people for things that they've said? How about we have the police going after people that have broken the law rather than going after people that disagree with government policy? Or disagree with left-wing policy, because all of these policies, that's where they originate from, left-wing liberalism. And then you end up with a Conservative Party claiming that they want to do something about it, but all of these agendas come from the Conservative Party. They're the ones that are pushing diversity. They're the ones that are pushing this idea that language in itself can be a crime. Language in itself can be the equivalent of violence. And of course, then when you say that language in itself is a crime, and you know you're supposed to try to prevent crime, and you're allowed to use a certain amount of physical coercion to prevent crime. Don't forget, if you see a crime taking place, you're supposed to stop it, and you're supposed to hold the person there until the police can come and arrest them. And if you're going to say that language in itself is a crime, then an argument could be made that violence could be used to prevent that person speaking. And this excuse will be given by certain minorities if they say, well, this person was using racial slurs and I just couldn't help myself but try to stop him. And this excuse will be given for the most horrendous violence. And they'll say, oh, well, a racial slur was used. The person was carrying out a hate crime against me, so I was just defending myself from this hate crime. So you end up with this bizarre situation where somebody could be seriously beaten up, but if the person that beat him up said, oh, well, he used a racial slur, the person that beat him up will be let off. And this is the situation that we've now got into. And I think most people are unaware of that. And if we were to say to the police, well, let's just go back to incitement to violence is against the law. And if somebody is inciting violence, then investigate them. But if somebody is simply using old-fashioned language, using old-fashioned terminology, or is simply affirming biological reality or their ideology or their beliefs online, then they should be left alone. To be honest, the police should really, I don't think the police should really be having anything to do with people's private conversations online, and even people's conversations on Facebook or Twitter or what have you. And they're just speaking their mind, they're just speaking their thoughts. The police should not be involved in policing people's language, especially when you've got language that people are using, which is just old-fashioned language. There's no hatred there. There's no, oh, I'm using this because I want to get people to go out and beat up minorities. That's why I'm using this old-fashioned language. It's just simply because old-fashioned language is straight and to the point, and it describes what you are trying to talk about. So we have the police that are getting involved in all these other issues, and that's where their time is being spent. And if their time wasn't being spent on policing people's language and policing speech issues and political correctness, then they would have more time to be investigating violent crime. And it does seem as if the general public are understanding this, because as it says here, more than 4 in 10 of people in Britain think the police are more interested in wokeness than they are in catching criminals. Just 43% of those surveyed trust the Conservative Party over Labour to reduce crime, with this lead narrowing in red wall seats to 49% trusting the Conservatives and 51% Labour. So the seats that used to be Labour, they don't trust Labour even more so than elsewhere, is what they're saying here. But it's still not a lot of people, is it, that are trusting the Conservative Party to reduce crime? And only 43% of the people surveyed think the Conservative Party are going to actually reduce crime. It seems people are now getting used to these lies that the people in government tell us. Well, I have another news story here to get into briefly, which is on the same subject, really. It's on policing, and this is over in America. And this is to do with this beating to death of this young black man over in Memphis. The View host Whoopi Goldberg has weighed into the row surrounding Tyre Nichols' death, asking if we need to see white people get beat before changes are made to policing. And this is what the mainstream media are pushing. They're saying, well, this is all because it's a failure within the police. That's why this guy got beaten to death. If you actually look at the video, he refused to get out of the car. The police kept telling him to get out of the car. He refused to get out of the car. So they pulled him out of the car. Don't forget, this is in America. So the guy could have a gun on him. He could have a weapon on him. At any time, he could have pulled the weapon and fired on the police. So that's what they're concerned about. They pull him out of the car and they get him on the ground and they're trying to say to him, lie on the ground, lie on the ground. And he's refusing to get on the ground, so they have to get a taser out. And they're literally pushing him with his taser, saying, look, stop resisting arrest. Get down on the ground. And he gets up and runs away. He literally gets up and runs away. And the police, I mean, I think they showed a lot of restraint not to just pull a gun on him and shoot him once he started running away. But he started running away, so they chase after him, and then they tase him. And that's the reason why he's no longer with us. It's because he resisted arrest. But according to Whoopi Goldberg, you know, we need to have white people get beaten up before white people will understand that it's the police that need to make the changes here. It's not the police that need to make the changes. Obviously, they can always make improvements. What needs to be making changes is in the education system. They need to be educating people not to resist arrest, not to try and run away. When the police say get out of the car, get out of the car. Don't make it so that the police have to drag you out of the car. That's what is at the source of this. And again, you could say, well, this is a problem with multiculturalism. Obviously, black people need to be dealt with in a different way to white people, I should say. Because when white people are told to do something by the police, they do it. When black people are told to do something by the police, they don't do it. That's the way that it seems to be. And in this instance, it was even with black police officers that ended up killing this young lad. Whoopi Goldberg thinks that it's not an issue with black people trying to resist arrest. She thinks it's an issue with the police, and that if we see white people getting beaten up, then we'll understand that. Goldberg insisted she was not inciting violence with her point, after the 29-year-old black man was beaten to death by cops, but did call for meaningful police reform. You know, and this is what they're calling for. They're saying, well, we need police reform. Instead of saying, well, we need black people to be educated about what to do when they get stopped by the police. Nicole's death sparked outrage across the world after graphic body cam footage showed him being fatally beaten by five police officers in Memphis while repeatedly crying out for his mother earlier this month. And they keep showing you that bit. But again, they don't show you the bit where he's running away and where he's resisting arrest. His parents also appeared on The View on Monday to pay tribute to their son, who touched everybody he knew in a positive way. The father and keen skateboarder had been pulled over for suspected reckless driving on January the 7th, and he died in hospital 3 days after his attack. So you've got to look at this from the police's point of view. You've got a guy in a car who's driving recklessly, obviously trying to escape the police. They pull him over. He refuses to get out of the car. He refuses to do what he's told. When they do get him out of the car and they try to make him as safe as possible, i.e. get him lying there flat down on the ground, he refuses to lie on the ground. They get a taser out and then the guy runs away. I mean, what are the police supposed to do? They're obviously going to have to give trace. And when they get him, they're obviously going to have to incapacitate him somehow, because otherwise he might run away again. He might have a gun on him. He might have a weapon on him. That's the way that they're going to be thinking. And if he had not been driving recklessly, trying to escape the police when they tried to pull him over, if he had done what the police said and got out of the car, and if he had not run away from them, then he would still be here today. It's not the fact that, the police need reform. What police reform could there be that would have prevented this death? Not stopping black people for reckless driving? Not giving chase to people that you've just arrested when they run away? Allowing people to get away? Is that the reforms that are needed? Speaking on The View on Monday, Goldberg questioned whether seeing white people being beaten up by officers would move the debate forward, as if white people have never been beaten up. You know, there's a certain number of white people that also get shot by the police every year, unarmed, and most people don't know their names, because you don't have a big movement like this to change police behaviour. You've also got the fact that if you are black, then you are more likely to end up shooting or harming the police officer as well when you're being arrested. I can recall seeing some stats on that yesterday. There's something like 3 or 4 times more likely to attack the police than if somebody is white. So you've got pattern recognition here as well, and you've got statistics. So the police are going to be thinking, well, if this guy is resisting arrest, he's going to be more likely to have a gun on him. He's going to be more likely to attack the police. So we should be more likely to prevent him from being able to do anything like that. But of course, they don't admit that. They just claim that this is just the innocent black man being beaten up by black people because the black police have been brainwashed with white supremacy. That's the narrative that's being pushed here. Speaking on The View, Goldberg said, "I'm not suggesting that, so don't write us and tell me what a racist I am. I'm just asking, is that what people have to see in order to wake up and realise this affects us all?" And that's with reference to white people being beaten up. The 67-year-old presenter called for police reform from the ground up. She added, "Clearly it doesn't matter if it's a white policeman or a black policeman. It's a problem in the policing itself." Again, I would say she's looking at it completely the opposite way. She should be saying, well, it's not the fact that it's a white policeman or a black policeman. And it's not a problem in policing. It's a problem in black youth resisting arrest and trying to attack the police and trying to run away. That's what the problem is. That's why it doesn't matter if it's a white policeman or a black policeman. The person that's trying to run away is going to come a cropper, isn't he? And it doesn't matter if he's black or white. If it's a white man that tried to run away or resist arrest, he would have been treated in the same way. He seemed to be saying that if it was a white lad, he wouldn't have been treated like that. Well, if he tried to resist arrest and run away, I'm certain he would have been treated in the same way. She says, "It seems things don't seem to make sense to people unless it is somebody they can feel or they can recognize." Well, yes, there is something to that. If you see somebody from your own ethnicity, they're a part of your extended family, so obviously you're going to be more concerned for them. But you're still going to be concerned for anybody. It doesn't matter what ethnicity they are. You're still going to be concerned for them. You know, if they've lost their life, you're going to be concerned for their family. But you also need to be looking at this from the other point of view. And it seems nobody is just pointing out the common sense aspect of this, that is, don't resist arrest. Five officers have been charged with second-degree murder of Nichols, who died in hospital 3 days after the attack, and they have been fired from the force. Horrific body cam footage showed the FedEx worker being beaten for 3 minutes while officers screamed profanities at him. Nichols calls out for his mother before his body goes limp, propped up against a squad car while the officers exchange fist bumps. So the officers were exchanging fist bumps because they thought, we caught him, he tried to escape, he tried to resist arrest, he attacked the police officers, he tried to run away from the police officers when we tried to get him on the ground, and we managed to catch him, and we managed to incapacitate him without shooting him. That's why they were exchanging fist bumps, because they didn't shoot him. If you resist arrest and you've got armed police, the likelihood is you're going to get shot. I mean, what happened here? This guy got beaten up instead. But that's what it all goes down to. Don't resist arrest. Instead of saying, well, we need to reform the police here in America, what they need to do is just educate black youth not to resist arrest. And what we need to do in Britain to get our police working, functioning as they should be functioning, is to stop them policing political commentary, stop them policing free speech issues. And wouldn't it be nice if they were to uphold the British Constitution and our right to free speech? And that's not quite out of the realms of possibility. I have seen the police doing that. I've seen them helping out with people want to protest and when people want to have a right-wing conference, and I've seen them talking about this and the importance that it is that we have freedom of speech, and you should be free to hold different political opinions to the opinions of the government. But if they're going to go after people for criticising government policy on Twitter or pointing out that there are only two genders, then we don't have freedom of speech, and it's a waste of police time, and the general public would much rather see the police going after violent criminals than going after people for things that they've said online. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.